It's Monday, July 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, another fatal police shooting in the United States.
There are a lot of ironies. There are a lot of things that concern the nation and the future of this country.
Turkey remains on edge following a failed coup. Also ahead, Republicans convene to formally select their candidate for U.S. president. And there may be more than one reason why the dinosaurs became extinct. It's all on today's International Edition. Three police officers were shot and killed and three others wounded early Sunday in the southern U.S. city of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, after a masked gunman dressed in black opened fire with an assault rifle. Hours later, authorities said the gunman, who is identified as 29-year-old Gavin Long, was killed and that a fourth officer, a deputy sheriff, was in critical condition at a local hospital after undergoing emergency surgery. Governor John Bel Edwards sought to reassure Baton Rouge residents still grappling with the July 5th police shooting of Alton Sterling, a black man that sparked widespread protests in major cities across the country.
We have to do better. An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. And the people who carried out this act, the individuals, they do not represent the people of Baton Rouge or the state of Louisiana or what's best about our country. They don't represent the values we stand for. Obviously, our community is hurting, and only through peace and unity can we heal. And that's going to take constructive dialogue. There simply is no place for more violence. That doesn't help anyone. It doesn't further the conversation. It doesn't address any injustice, perceived or real. It is just an injustice in and of itself.
Edwards did not address the earlier shooting death in his comments, but instead focused on Sunday's violence. Later, speaking at the White House in Washington, President Barack Obama called on the entire nation to pull together.
We have our divisions, and they are not new. Around-the-clock news cycles and social media sometimes amplify these divisions. And I know we're about to enter a couple of weeks of conventions where our political rhetoric tends to be more overheated than usual. And that is why it is so important that everyone, regardless of race, or political party, or profession, regardless of what organizations you are a part of, everyone right now focus on words and actions that can unite this country rather than divide it further. We don't need inflammatory rhetoric. We don't need careless accusations thrown around to score political points or to advance an agenda. We need to temper our words and open our hearts, all of us.
One day after the fatal police shooting of Alton Sterling, a Minnesota man was fatally shot during a traffic stop. And then the next day, five Dallas police officers were shot and killed by a heavily armed lone gunman. Before being killed by police, the Dallas shooter told police during a tense standoff that he was enraged by police killings. We turn now to check out how the online community has reacted to the Baton Rouge shootings. International Edition social media reporter G. Abby Lee is here with the latest. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. We've both been glued to our TV in the last couple of hours. First, there was the press conference in Louisiana where the shooting happened, and we just heard from President Obama here in Washington about an hour ago.
Well, let's begin with Mr. Obama's press conference. Did the White House account send out live tweets as well?
It did. The press conference was scheduled for 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, but it didn't start until much closer to 5 p.m., as you know. The White House is on Twitter, at White House, and it shared a link to its website where the press conference was streamed live. Mr. Obama said the attacks on police are an attack on all of us and the rule of law that makes society possible. But his main message was on the need for the American people to stay united. The White House tweeted, "Only we can prove in our own actions and words that we will not be divided, even if we have to do it again and again and again." Within 30 minutes, more than 300 people liked that tweet. The White House also shared the president's full statement on its Twitter page before the press conference.
Well, let's move on to Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards, who we just heard from, and a few law enforcement officials spoke at the press conference. He's on Twitter at LouisianaGOV, and on Facebook, he shared an official statement. He wrote, "This is unspeakable, an unjustified attack on all of us at a time when we need unity and healing." His statement is getting a lot of attraction on Facebook right now, to a point where loading the comments is taking a very long time. And if you do look at the comments, it's quite clear why both the governor and the president cautioned against division. Many of the comments carry racial undertones, some blaming the Black Panthers group for the rise in violence against the police force. Jim, back to you.
Well, thank you very much, G, for that wrap-up. There will be certainly much, much more on this in the coming days on social media and right here on International Edition. You can tweet us your comments and questions to at VOA _IE. And there you will also find myself and G on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories trending at this hour in Asia, Pakistan is puzzled over stepped-up U.S. criticism of anti-terror efforts. Brother arrested for killing Pakistani social media star. In Bangladesh, a professor is arrested for leasing to cafe attackers. Vietnamese police detain anti-China activists. Arms spending may rise as Beijing asserts control in the South China Sea. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our website, voanews.com, and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has denounced suggestions that Washington was involved in Friday's failed coup in Turkey. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has accused Fethullah Gulen, a reclusive cleric now living in Pennsylvania, of orchestrating the violence and demanded that Gulen be extradited. Erdogan frequently refers to masterminds who he says are bent on breaking up Turkey, in what appears to be a veiled reference to the West in general and, more specifically, the United States. Gulen has denied being behind the failed coup and denied knowledge of who might be responsible. Meanwhile, in Turkey, Erdogan has promised to rid that country of people involved in the coup attempt and said that the use of capital punishment cannot be delayed. About 6,000 people have been detained so far. And meanwhile, the call continues for residents to take to the streets in support of the government, as freelance journalist Tulin Deolu joins us from Istanbul with the latest.
Well, they've been calling people to come onto the streets for the whole week. To show solidarity with the president. On Friday night, as we are writing history, this is really historic times in Turkey. It wasn't only this failed coup and the bizarreness of people from the same family, as I name it, bombing the Turkish parliament, I guess really blew so many Turkish fellows' minds up. But just as that is bizarre and irritating, and that's, going to leave a permanent mark in our hearts and minds, it was also equally irritating and disturbing to hear the imams going up to the minarets, taking the, speakers, and first, speaking in Arabic, calling people to unity, and then in Turkish, asking people to come onto the street in defense of the president. We have never seen the mosques being so directly engaged with the political discourse of this country. And so as much as the president is rallying people to come onto the streets to defend the democracy, I guess it is... it shouldn't be even, talk to the, Western nations to say that secularism is embedded within the word, democracy. That means the separation between the religion and the political decisions. And, to, you know, on Friday night, that wasn't there in Turkey. So there are a lot of ironies. There are a lot of things that concerns the nation and the future of this country.
Is there concern that this may destabilize security in the country?
We should be really very concerned about the security status of the country. Even before this coup, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant had carried not four, but, you know, plenty, you know, attacks within inside the country, and people are really getting nervous about it. This coup showed that the, you know, security structure has, you know, received some significant damage, and that there is no unity to fight against anything that can be deemed as enemy or a terror organization. So that shows Turkey's weakness. So we can only hope that there will be, you know, no more plans to take lives on Turkey's streets. But you never know when you're talking with, you know, about terrorists and their, you know, mindset.
And I thought it was fascinating, too, that President Erdogan used social media to address the nation while he was apparently vacationing, something that has been a bit of a thorn. He's tried to, at times, rein in social media in Turkey.
Absolutely. Wasn't that really something? I mean, he deemed the social media as evil. And then as the coup was breaking, he was on Periscope to reach out to the people. So that was really very interesting. But, you know, things do happen. Once you're tested, you never know how you're going to react. And we are also, you know, seeing another face of the president in that respect.
Tulin, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Freelance journalist Tulin Dalulu in Istanbul. Meanwhile, thousands of people attended funeral Sunday there and in Ankara for those killed. Prayers were read simultaneously from Turkey's 85,000 mosques to honor those who died. On the eve of the U.S. presidential nominating conventions, there are three new surveys that show Democrat Hillary Clinton with a consistent advantage over Republican Donald Trump, even as American voters apparently view both of them unfavorably. The edge for Clinton ranged from 4 to 7 percentage points over Mr. Trump, who is set to claim the Republican nomination this week in Cleveland, Ohio. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us with more.
Jim, Republicans are up first with their convention. The Democrats will be next the following week. But for right now, there's a great deal of interest among political junkies like myself as to what exactly will transpire. Now, some of the suspense has been relieved by the fact that we now know who Donald Trump's running mate will be. It'll be Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who is a man with solid conservative credentials, who appeals to the religious right. He checks a lot of the boxes that a Republican presidential candidate would want to have, particularly one who is not fully embraced by the more conservative evangelical wing of the party. So there is a sense that Mike Pence is a good pick in that vein. But there is some question as to whether or not he will help Donald Trump in the general election with a broader American public.
Just coming from the Midwest doesn't guarantee that you're going to have that broad base that perhaps Mr. Trump needs in the general election. But it is somebody that is more of a person who can help him with the governance of the country. And I think that's something that Trump has even said himself, that he was looking, while he's the outside candidate, his vice president would be an insider, if you will.
Mike Pence has served on Capitol Hill as a representative. He has been a governor, so he has some executive experience as well. So he has lawmaking under his belt. He has executive experience under his belt. And when you're talking about someone at the top of the ticket who has never held elective office of any sort, I don't know, maybe Donald Trump was class president at some point. But other than that, there is no elective office that we know of that he has held. It is very good for someone like that to have someone who has served in multiple offices in multiple capacities. And I should say that job number one for any nominee is to get your party solidly behind you to get the base excited, and Mike Pence certainly is capable of doing that for Donald Trump. Once you have your party unified behind you, then you try to reach out to the broader American electorate.
And that's been quite a job for Donald Trump, because he's been so divisive and, you might say, corrosive in his rhetoric and things that he's said about members of his own party. And at one point, there was the specter of perhaps the delegates just starting to vote their conscience as opposed to maybe voting for Trump.
Indeed. Just a couple of weeks ago, it wasn't clear who exactly would be going to this Republican National Convention and whether they would have a sufficient number of speakers to fill the time on the convention floor. We knew that Donald Trump would be speaking and his eventual running mate would be speaking, but beyond that, it was an absolute blank slate. Well, the party has somewhat come around. House Speaker Paul Ryan is going to be addressing the convention. Donald Trump's main rival in the primary process, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, is going to be addressing the convention. So there has been progress on that front. And I should say that Donald Trump himself has appeared somewhat more disciplined of late. He's actually using a teleprompter. His off-the-cuff comments are far fewer than they used to be. So he is adopting sort of the trappings of a traditional candidate, even though he would be the first to admit that he is not a traditional candidate.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman is with us each and every week, and we're going to follow it to the end.
Thank you, Jim.
And, of course, you'll find much more about the conventions on our website, voanews.com, all throughout the Republican and Democratic conventions. Follow us on Twitter as well, at @VOA_IE, and you can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. What did the dinosaurs in? Was it volcanic activity that poisoned the air and water, or a massive asteroid strike that darkened the skies and blotted out the sun? Well, it's been a hotly debated topic among scientific circles for, well, probably as long as there are scientists. But now new research suggests a third option. Joellen McBride has more on a deadly 1-2 punch.
Dinosaurs ruled the Earth about 160 million years ago. Then they died out. Two catastrophic events occurred 66 million years ago that rocked their world. A huge volcanic eruption in what's now India significantly altered Earth's climate. Then, 150,000 years later, a meteorite smashed into the coast of Mexico, also causing changes to the climate. Scientists have argued for decades about which event spelled disaster for the dinosaurs, most likely because they hadn't found the perfect window into the past. But on an Antarctic island near the southern tip of South America, scientists found a clear record of what happened.
The timing of the volcano and the meteorite are quite close together.
University of Michigan paleoclimatologist Sierra Peterson notes that with only 150,000 years separating them, layers from the two events are so close together in the rock record that it's very difficult to distinguish the effects of one or the other.
At Seymour Island, there's 40 meters separating those two events. So we can really separate the influences of each one, and that's why we can see the climatic impact of both as two separate events.
It makes sense why people thought it was one or the other, and really they were both right.
Andrea Dutton is now a geochemist at the University of Florida. When she was a graduate student, she tried to use fossilized shells from Seymour Island to study ancient climate changes. but the results were difficult to interpret. The fossils got shelved until Peterson showed up with a new technique. It focuses on the types of carbon molecules present in a shell, which depends strongly on the temperature of the water when that layer of shell formed. So, for the first time, they were able to determine the temperature record during the last days of the dinosaurs, and they found that things got hot. Twice.
At the time when the volcanism began, we found a rapid warming spike that had not been seen before. And we also found at the boundary itself, when the meteorite hit, we also saw another warming spike.
It was the ultimate 1-2 punch. If the dinosaurs thought the acid rain and volcanic dust were bad, Dutton says things only got worse with the rapid temperature increase that followed.
Certainly these clams that we were studying and the other fauna in this system, they had experienced temperatures this warm earlier in the Cretaceous. But what happened here is the temperature increase was so fast that it was a large stress that they weren't able to adapt that quickly to the large temperature change.
Species that survived the first warming spike were quickly delivered another blow by the asteroid impact, which also caused a temperature increase. Peterson and Dutton suggest we pay close attention to this work reported in Nature Communications, because the effects of rapid climate change in the Cretaceous are eerily similar to the effects scientists are seeing now from global warming.
The volcanism preceding the meteorite impact put stress on that environment in the same way that the anthropogenic CO2 emissions we are doing now are putting on the environment today. We are already seeing extinctions and certain organisms being under a lot of environmental stress, reduced habitat, things like that. All of the same things we're observing today would have been in play in the Cretaceous as well. And so, you know, I guess fingers crossed for no meteorite impact.
It appears we have a lot to learn from the demise of the dinosaurs. Joella McBride, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime you like at our website, voanews.com, on Facebook at VOA Now, and on Twitter at VOA_IE. We can always find our director, Tracy Carter, behind our glass, along with engineer Daryl Smith. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for South and Central Asian Affairs Nisha Biswal met with Bangladesh Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina and other high-ranking officials to affirm U.S. support for Bangladesh's stand against violent extremism. She also held meetings with the diplomatic community and business leaders who are concerned but committed to stand with Bangladesh. She visited Gul Shanholi Artisan Bakery to pay respects to the victims of the July 1st terror attack, where more than 20 people were murdered. Violent extremism is a global threat, the assistant secretary said. As we have seen too frequently, international terrorist groups can recruit and operate anywhere. I am here, she said, to offer U.S. assistance and support for Bangladesh's own efforts against terrorism and extremism. This is an extension of our long and deep partnership based on shared values of democracy, tolerance, and inclusion. And the United States remains committed to this broad-based relationship with Bangladesh, of which counterterrorism is but one part. Sharing the concerns of Bangladeshis, said Assistant Secretary Biswal, we have taken steps to bolster the security of our staff. Our support for, cooperation with, and commitment to this country remains as robust as ever. We remain steadfast in our friendship with the Bangladeshi people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.